From APM in New York, I'm Ben Johnson, exploring the latest on how technology is changing our lives and our society. The Wall Street Journal reported late Tuesday that U.S. spy agencies are continuing to use eavesdropping technology on some of its closest allies. This despite an announcement in 2014 that surveillance of certain allies would wind down. The reporting looks specifically at surveillance of Israel at a time when relations between the U.S. and that country's leadership is strained. Adam Entis is national security correspondent for The Wall Street Journal and co-wrote this report. Adam, tell me about this so-called implant technology.
Well, they're both cyber implants and then there are physical implants. And what they do is they basically take data that's crossing through those networks and relay them to the NSA for analysis and for it to be collected and to be analyzed. And so what we discovered in the story is one of the early decisions that Obama made after the Snowden revelations was not to remove any implants because he didn't want to take away any capabilities that the U.S. has for doing its surveillance. And what they decided to do is remove so-called selectors, which are emails and phone numbers for specific individuals.
In the specific case of Israel, some of these implants are still potentially being used?
So what we discovered in reporting the story was that in 2012, the intelligence community ramped up its surveillance of the Israelis because of concern that Bibi Netanyahu, their prime minister, was eyeing a potential strike against a nuclear facility in Iran. They put, in this case, a cyber implant, which they were able to use during the during that period in 2012 and after that period in 2014-2015, which gave them access to these internal communications within the prime minister's office.
What does all of this tell us about the state of NSA surveillance when it comes to U.S. allies right now?
Basically, it's a mixed bag. Some leaders, such as Merkel of Germany and Hollande of France, were placed in a special group that was called a protected list. Their communications would be off limits. And when it came to Bibi Netanyahu, the Israeli leader, the U.S. was already monitoring him, and the decision was made not to stop that monitoring.
Adam Entis is national security correspondent for The Wall Street Journal and co-wrote this report. Adam, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Marketplace Tech is listener-supported. To keep our coverage relevant and awesome, please make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift in any amount counts twice, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Help us keep you up to date and well-informed wherever you are. Donate at marketplace.org by December 31st. It has been just about a year since Google pulled Google Glass off the market, so maybe time for it to rise again. The company's new filings on the technology with the Federal Communications Commission have surfaced this week. Among the changes, a green light that goes on when they're being used to record, which might help allay the fears of privacy advocates. Google's spectacles with the tiny viewfinder that promised to show you relevant information while you walked around bumped up against pretty negative public reaction. Maybe why Glass 2.0 looks focused on business applications. Lindsay Turrentine of CNET has been looking at this. Lindsay, what does the filing mean?
That means that Google Glass will be designed for specific work environments and to help people get jobs done rather than sort of as this thing you put on your face and keep there all the time. So this version is going to fold, you know, kind of like normal glasses so that you can wear it sometimes and then put it away. And then it's also supposed to have a faster processor and a longer battery life, which is great because the last thing you want to do is have to attach your glasses to a charger.
I keep saying to people that one of the biggest applications of virtual reality, augmented reality, mixed reality, now that we have all three of those phrases in the world, is applications not just for entertainment, but for business.
The specific uses could be incredibly helpful. So let's say that you do something with your hands and you need both of them, but you also need to communicate and you need some instructions and you need to look things up. Google Glass is great for that. And we've seen really interesting experiments with surgeons wearing Google Glass so that they can look things up, get advice, and communicate while they have their hands in somebody's body.
And also, we've spoken in the past on our show to firefighters who have experimented with this and to others in the first responder space as well.
Sure. Yeah. I've actually spoken to a police officer who is incredibly interested in Google Glass, partially because it can record, so it's like a wearable camera, but also because it's great for figuring things out and potentially for even identifying people.
Are there other companies that might get to this business aspect before Google does?
I think that everybody's trying something a little bit different. So what Microsoft is doing with HoloLens is fascinating and really compelling. It's really an experience that requires you to be in one place and not really walking around out in lots of different settings. And Microsoft is taking that approach to augmented reality and this sort of mixed reality world where you would actually be projecting or virtually projecting something over a space that you exist within. And that's a really different application from Google Glass, which might be there just sort of to help you out, give you some information, identify things in your field of view, but in a little bit of a less invasive, more lightweight situation.
Lindsay Turrentine, editor-in-chief of CNET.com. Lindsay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.
As Google tries to push back into the face-based technology world, Intel has been trying to enter the mobile world. The company announced this week that it has completed its acquisition of fellow chipmaker Altera for $16 billion and change. And Ambrish Srivastava is with the Bank of Montreal. He thinks Intel paid too much. And yet?
You know, how do you justify the return on the investment you're making? And Intel paid a tremendous valuation for this company.
Think mobile devices. It was once true that everybody, including big tech companies, looked forward to the latest and greatest Intel chips in computers every few years. These days, new devices seem to pop up every few months, even as Moore's Law has waned and chip advances have slowed down. So companies like Intel are looking to make new kinds of chips. Altera may help with that on phones and tablets, but also the cloud. Srivastava again.
Down the line, they want to have chips. They can combine Altera's technology and their own server chips into the data center market, which will enable you to, for example, go and do search faster.
Ambrish Srivastava is with the Bank of Montreal. The biggest chipmaker's acquisition, okayed by the EU recently, might make way for new programmable chips that could help with intense computing tasks like facial recognition, which will probably help the killer robots. Oh, well. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.